And when we look at Bach's music and we find these gems of imagination and we find how he works with his material, we learn from that. And so composers, I think, should be more interested in the work of someone like Bach, because more than just an entertainment, it is a how-to manual, a self-help manual on how to find what's best in our own imaginations. So it really is important that we get into some detail. So let us do the nasty. Actually, analyze some details to see what I'm talking about. Up to now, we've really been skimming. A fugue here, a ritornello there. Now, it's significant for me and for you to talk about the piece that I've chosen for our most in-depth analysis. Is it a flashy orchestral work? No. Is it a massive and moving organ work? No. Is it a profound and spiritual religious work? No. It's a bunch of ostensibly cookie-cutter dance movements written for that most wonderful instrument, the harpsichord. Yeah, I'm being facetious here on purpose. I've purposely chosen a piece where the artistic restrictions, where the control element is the greatest, where Bach would seem to have the littlest leeway in terms of fooling around with the form in order to see how he creates a magnificently grander work out of a very, very restrictive procedure. So, I feel lightheaded, I'm nervous, I feel anxiety. Courage, bear with me. All right, on to the seven movements of this partita. There are seven movements, and I would point them out now. Prelude, allemande, courante, sarabande, tempo di menuetto, passepied, and gigue. The four required movements are there, and they are in order, although the second, third, and fourth movements, allemande, courante, and sarabande, are required, and then we have two optional dances, and only the gigue, the last of the required dances, occurs not attached to one of the others. But that's okay. They're still in the order they're supposed to be in. Like all of Bach's works, Partita No. 5 is a stunning integration, in this case, of French taste, German musical rigor, and polyphonic and harmonic intensity, and indeed also Bach's brilliant keyboard style. He could play and he could write. Melodic and virtuosic extravagance tempered by formal control. Yes, that darned binary dance form. He doesn't try to get out of it. He just sees what he can build into it. Our plan of analytic attack: analyze the work as an example of the German keyboard suite and analyze it in some detail as an example of Bach's incredible compositional art and keyboard style. All right, now as I mentioned before, there's a big problem with the keyboard suite. We've got a potentially dull, certainly predictable genre. All the dances are in the same key. All the dances are in the same form. And in a harpsichord piece, folks, we have the same timbre, the same tone color everywhere. The formal variety, the freedom we observed in works like Concerti is out of the question here. It's not going to be something Bach's going to indulge in. But, as always, and typical of Bach, he creates a larger structure out of these seven individual movements through extraordinary and subtle means. That will be the first thing we're going to talk about. Bach alternates between movements which are harmonically conceived, that is, where the melodic surface is clearly outlining harmonies through arpeggios, and movements which are melodically conceived. These are movements with very high melodic profile, more vocal in sound, more embellishment. The harmonies are not on the surface. I'm going to repeat this because it's so important. Bach alternates between movements which are harmonically conceived, where the melodic surface basically defines harmonies. And I've talked about this in previous lectures. This is the use of arpeggios in a melodic context. This is what I would call a harmonically conceived melody. That melody simply outlines a harmony, and therefore I would call that a harmonically conceived melody, as opposed to a melody that is clearly conceived vocally, that is, with a sense of song.